You want a shot at playing in late October. You got to start talking now.
He leaps in the air, makes the throw to first to complete the double play.
The Miami Marlins Hot Stove Show with Kyle Seeloff is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Today, December 19th. Happy holiday season to all of you joining us tonight. This is our third Hot Stove Show of the off season, and as always, it's brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. We've got another good show coming up this evening. Coming up in just a minute, we'll chat with Marlins starting pitcher Adam Conley, who had a very nice finish to his 2016 season. And later, we'll give Tim Healy of the Sun Sentinel a ring to chat about the Marlins offseason to date and what to expect in 2017. Now, in between all that, the Marlins did make more news late last week in the bullpen, signing right-handed reliever Junichi Tozawa to a two-year, $12 million deal. And although not official and announced yet by the ball club, reliever Brad Ziegler and the Marlins have reached an agreement on a two-year deal valued at $16 million plus incentives. That according to sources. So we'll chat about the bullpen and what to expect in 2017 coming up shortly. All right, let's get right to it. Our first guest of the evening, Marlins starting pitcher and a left-hander. He had a terrific 2016 season. Adam Conley. Adam, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking some time for us tonight. How's the family doing? How's the offseason going?
Everything's doing great. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
How's the family doing?
Excellent. The offseason, the guys we play know how crucial it is to get home and rest and, kind of find a routine that's kind of on your time. So it's a time that we really enjoy and cherish together, as busy as the season keeps us and all the travel and all the craziness. But to come home and be grilling up dinner out on the grill outside and see old friends and everything, it's just a really, really nice time of peace and relaxation for us.
I know the baseball season's a grind, and we chat about it quite a lot during that 6-7 month stretch, and we'll be at it again in Jupiter pretty soon. When the season does end, though, Adam, what do you like to do to get away from baseball?
Usually the first thing that's on my mind, usually as far as going out and doing something, is I like to take a trip up to Kentucky every year and go hunting with my dad. At least in years past, that's been really the only time I've been able to see him. So I like to go up there and bow hunt with him in Kentucky. And the last couple of years, we've made a trip to the Blue Ridge Mountains and spent time in a cabin up there and everything. So just with my personality and everything, and what my wife and I really enjoy is kind of getting out of the city for a little while and really enjoying God's creation and just being out in the wilderness and kind of having a nice breakup from the city living and all that of the season and the plane rides and bus rides and stuck in traffic and all that stuff. So that's typically about the first place that we like to get us away from all that.
When you do get away from it, out of curiosity, when does your off season start? Like, were you working out the day after we got back from Washington, or do you take a month off?
Typically from lifting, I usually take about somewhere around a week off. Sometimes it depends on where the days fall. I think this year it was actually about 10 days that I took off. During the season, especially toward the end of the year and everything, when it comes to my strength program and throwing and all that, it's really more about maintaining what you've got and kind of maintenance on yourself physically to be able to perform on the field. And, of course, when the off season comes around and I'm not pitching on the field, obviously my priority changes rather than the priority being performance on the field. Because I'm not on the field, I can change my priority to being strength and rest and recovery and all those things. So the gears kind of shift a little bit, which is a nice change of pace for us. And it's something that I really enjoy. I've always enjoyed working out and being in the gym and learning new ways to do that. And that's been a process that I've been going through over the last couple of years. And of course, with the experience over the parts of the last two seasons, being in the major leagues has been a huge help to me, just from having veteran players around me who have been able to kind of show me the ropes from their perspective, what they like to do. And the whole process of me kind of molding that to myself mechanically and physically and all those things to kind of make that make sense for me. So it's a journey that never ends. You're constantly learning. And that just that alone is one of the reasons why I love this game so much.
Marlins starting pitcher Adam Conley joining us tonight on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. All right, Adam, let's talk a little Marlins here, a little big picture stuff. I'm sure you follow the moves that have been made and stuff of that nature. When you take a look at the composition of this ball club and the Marlins, do you see a team ready to take the next step?
Well, I'll start off by saying that when it comes to tracking all the moves that are made and everything, I've got a secret weapon in Tom Kohler. He's our representative on the Marlins for the union, and is very involved in those things. He's a veteran player. He's a starting pitcher as well. And so him living in the area and me working out with him and seeing him a lot and everything, he kind of helps paint that bigger picture for me from that side of the game. He's a wealth of knowledge in that facet. So I'm lucky to have him around. He's taught me a lot in this game over the last, 5 years that I've known him and been working with him and everything. So that's obviously a huge help for me. But as far as the club that we're bringing together, I'm really, really excited about the pieces that we already have. And then there's been additions. We've signed Volquez and AJ Ellis. And there's just some moves that we've made where you see in baseball this constant tweaking of trying to find the right pieces at the right time. And it's, again, this is kind of the ultimate chess game that baseball is trying to figure all that out to make the best team you can. But there's 29 other teams doing the same thing, you know, and there's only so many guys available and the market changes every year. And there's all these details that go into it. But at the end of the day, we're going to send a field of players out there that I really believe have a chance to go beat anybody on any day. I know we've said it a lot over the years. I know that the players in that clubhouse, but if you look at our lineup, I think it's as good as anyone's on paper. It's just a matter of keeping guys healthy. And guys playing to their potential, which if you go look at our bullpen and you look at our bench and you look at our starting rotation, you could say the same. So really any area of any team that you're looking at, there's obviously strength there because you're talking about Major League Baseball players. They're the best at what they do on the planet. I think that it's a matter kind of the camaraderie and the strength of fellowship on the team, kind of a common goal on the team, a certain selflessness on the team. And the right leadership. And I think when you look at those areas, because everyone in the major leagues is talented, when you look at those other kind of areas you can't necessarily measure quite as easily, I say we have all those things, and that's what gets me really excited about going to war with these guys.
You know, it's always fun chatting with you, whether it's right after a start or before a start. And I say that because you're a really bright, smart guy, Adam, and I always feel like whenever we chat baseball, you're always digging below the surface of the game a little bit. And what I mean by that, and what I want to ask you is, when you take a look at pitching, is it so much more to you than just throwing the ball? In a sense that I always get this sense that you look for the science behind it, and you're always looking for little ways or ways that maybe other guys don't to improve the craft. Do you see it as an art? Is pitching an art?
Yeah, I think a lot of that stems from kind of my perspective on baseball in general. You know, I mean, I think that my position towards the game is kind of an old school mentality. You know, when it comes to policing the game and everything, those types of things, I think that should be done by the players on the field, you know, and that's just kind of an old school mentality that where a lot of you've kind of seen a shift and a change in that way and everything. And when you look at the game in that old school mentality, when you look at how the game was played, you know, when Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux and Smoltz and all these guys were on the, you know, were pitching, you know, they didn't necessarily have the information that we have nowadays. They didn't necessarily have the stats and the numbers and all these things. And they did it their own way. You know, I mean, these were what I look at when I try and investigate, when I look at the best pitchers on the planet, and I try and see what they did, you know, I mean, no two guys did it the same. And so, all I can really draw from that is that there's a way that I'm going to have to do it that makes me the best pitcher that I can possibly be, and it's not going to be the way that anyone else does it. So in that sense, when it comes to the scouting reports and all those things, I definitely see pitching more as an art than I do as science. I listen personally when I'm on the mound, I'm listening to my gut a lot more than I'm listening to my mind. You know, I'm getting a gut feeling or I'm going with an urge I have to throw a certain pitch or a conviction I have to throw a certain pitch a lot of times. And you know, sometimes that doesn't work out for me, but a lot of times when I'm able to execute those pitches, that's where I find my most success. So in my, and I'm not saying that means it's right for everyone, but in my personal experience, for me viewing it that way, I've found that to kind of be an affirmation for me. to stick with those convictions and stick with that gut feeling rather than what statistically some numbers said on a sheet of paper kind of thing, if that makes sense.
No, it does. When you pitch, do you try to stay a pitch? Are you always thinking about the next pitch, or is it very cliche when you take it pitch by pitch?
Yeah, I think that's just what it is. And when you talk about something cliche, it's funny. It's like stereotypes. It's like they kind of exist for a reason. So for something to be cliche, it's like, you know, in that instance, the example you used, it's like that really is the most – that really, in my mind, really is the best, most efficient way to pitch. I mean, if you're really – the game of baseball, especially at this level, can change so fast that if you're not focusing on what you're doing in the present moment, it's easy for this game to get away from you because guys are constantly making adjustments. And the fact is really no matter who you are, you know, on any given day, no matter what player you are, there's somebody out there that day who's going to make adjustments better than you.
Right.
There's somebody out there who's going to be more locked in than you or whatever. And those are seasons as the human body. I mean, we just go in and out of seasons of what people call like being in the zone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just kind of how I view that whole thing. Basically, in my opinion, when I'm on the mound, my conviction is that if I focus sharply on the pitch I'm about to make and execute that pitch, that's really all I can control. That's all I really should be concerned with because. If I'm not focusing on this pitch, you know, let's say it's a fastball and I'm really trying to get to a slider on a guy. Well, if I don't execute the slider in the first place and the guy hits a double off the wall, then that slider I had planned for that guy doesn't really do me any good.
Right.
So it's really just, I think, about taking a game that's very fast-paced and very complicated and very dynamic in a very, very difficult game. It's taking the experience I have and the trust in myself that I have to try and make that game as slow and as simple as possible. And in my opinion, the way to do that is to focus on throwing one pitch the best I possibly can at a time.
Who do you most look up to in Major League Baseball?
Oh, man, I was hoping you weren't going to hit me with any questions like that.
Who'd you idolize growing up anyway?
Yeah, Randy Johnson and Nolan Ryan.
Those not a bad two. One.
You know, if I had to pick a righty and I had to pick a lefty, if you make me pick one, I'd have to go with Johnson because he's a lefty. But
he's in the Hall of Fame too, Adam, so that's not a bad pick.
He did all right. Yeah, he threw about 100 with a slider at 90. Yeah, he was all right. People didn't like hit. I think a lot of guys got the flu when they were in the lineup against him. You know?
Absolutely.
That's kind of the old school picture that I look at in the game of baseball that really gets me fired up about the game. You know, is all the intangibles that go into that. Nobody was really concerned with Randy Johnson's spin rate. You know, I mean, there was so many things going on with him when you got in the box that it really was about the art of pitching, and it really was about what he brought to the table and his competitiveness. You could say the same about Nolan, and you could say the same about a lot of the great pitchers we have in the game today.
Yeah.
And when I watch the game of baseball, I'm really trying, really just watch the game of baseball and enjoy it. Those are the things that are glaringly obvious to me, you know, even more so than a guy's stuff or, you know, any of those kind of more measurable types of things.
Whether it was your dad or your high school coach or, I don't know, maybe even Juan Nieves for that to that measure, who's been most influential to you in your baseball career?
Yeah, that for me, that's what's been to me so amazing is I, living my whole life almost playing the game of baseball, I've seen how many how much advice and coaching and everything has been given that's really hurt players, you know, really gotten either set them back or gotten them injured or things like that. And really when I look back in my life, really all of the coaches that I can think of that I've ever had have really been people who have invested in me and really made me better as a person and as a baseball player. And, you know, to kind of, to have a string of success like that to go on for, I don't even know how, you know, 15 years, I guess, for me to make it to 15, 16, 17 years of coaching like that, for me to get to professional baseball and then, find my way and go my way. I mean, it's really astounding to me, that the Lord's provision has been on me and, really that his calling for me has been to be a Major League Baseball player. So that's what's, when I look back, I just think, man, was I really that lucky, you know, or did God have bigger plans for me that this was his intention when he gave me these gifts? So I could name them, you know, but I got 10 of them, you know, so
right.
It's like, it's just every step I've gone, it seems like I've had the right people on my path to teach me what I needed to know at that time.
All right, Adam, I'm sure there's there's many of times throughout a player's career in which the following may happen, but has there been one time in your Major League Baseball career to date where you really pinched yourself and said, this is incredible what I get to do for a living?
I'm going to be extremely bold in saying this and say no.
Really?
It's hard to explain that. Yeah, I've been playing baseball since I was, I was 3 years old, turning four, and I've been playing ever since. And I don't know how to explain this to you, but when I was 7 years old, I said I was going to pitch in the big leagues. And at 7 years old, I meant it. And obviously, looking back now in my life, I realize how that was God's plan for my life and how little I really had to do with that at 7 years old, because what seven-year-old just decides that's what they're going to do and really means it and does it. But this is just a journey that I've been on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And as I've gone through the journey, there's been more affirmation for me. It's something that I've been preparing to do and thinking about doing for a long time. I don't know how much longer I'll be able to do it.
Right.
I don't, who knows how long a career is going to be and what it'll be, you know, but while I'm in it and while I'm on this journey, this has been something that I've invested greatly in. And it's something that I expected to do. I know that there's a lot of people who expect to do it and it doesn't work out. And I understand, but for me, I've had this perspective that this life and, you know, my marriage and being a father and first and foremost, my faith, so far outweighs what I do for a living, that as great a game as baseball is, and as much fun as I have doing it and as much excitement it brings my family and my daughter and my wife and the experiences that we have and everything, I do realize how temporary it is. And I do realize, how easily it can be taken away. And so, I'm really trying to, enjoy it the way that it's appropriate to enjoy it. And by that, I just mean not holding on to it so tightly that when it leaves, it'll really hurt me badly, you know. And it's something that I try to not take for granted and be very, very thankful for, that I have the blessing and the opportunity to play this game.
Your most memorable moment thus far in Major League Baseball would be what?
before you finish that question, I thought you were gonna include the no-hitter into the eighth in Milwaukee.
Does that still eat at you? Do you think about that often?
No, I don't think about it a lot. That was kind of just the first thing that pops into my head, you know, when you're asking me about that, because that's kind of in the game of baseball, that's kind of, I think, the glaringly obvious thing. As far as performance on the field and everything, but what's the most on my heart and my mind and everything was the passing of Jose last year. And I know that the doors were closed and there wasn't media and there weren't cameras and everything, but what I witnessed in that clubhouse and the growth of the men in that clubhouse and just the relationships that were built in there and that have been built and, I mean, just what I witnessed through that whole process, the strength of these guys, and knowing that these are the guys that I get to go play baseball with every day, was a powerful thing. And that kind of is alluding more towards what I was mentioning earlier about the intangibles of this team that get me so excited to be their teammate.
Right.
And at the same time, what I was just talking about is really my priorities in my life. And I saw things happen in the hearts of these men and in this clubhouse that really are far more important than a game of baseball. And praise God that through the game of baseball, that this was even possible amongst these men to come together in such a tragic time and have one thing on their heart and to go play for each other. I just know it was a powerful thing to be in that clubhouse and on that field with those guys and, proud to be their teammate.
Yeah, we've heard that from David Sampson, Michael Hill. We've heard that from others, too, that in the worst of ways, it really brought you guys together. All right, Adam, two more. Your favorite ballpark? I know you've played in most of them now, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I've still got a few to go, I got to be careful listing these off.
Outside of Marlins Park. Let's go outside of Marlins Park.
No, I was going to say, I'll just go for it. Actually, Two of my favorite places to actually play are in my division. I really like going to Citi Field, even though I hate the city. Being in the city, I mean, not New York City, but generally the city. I really like Citi Field. I think that in Washington, D.C., I think they have a really nice park and just run things really well. It's fun to go be a part of that environment. But I have to say that my all-time favorite right now, fields that I've actually played on, Wrigley Field was my favorite to go to. I went there once when I was 15. I was part of a tournament that I was playing in and ended up being able to go watch a game at Wrigley. And then it was, I guess, 11 years later, here I am, you know, pitching in Wrigley. So just a historic park. Like I keep saying it, but I love the olden days, I guess you could say, of baseball. I have kind of that mentality and everything. And so to go to one of those older parks like that, a really traditional park like that, was a joy for me. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, a lot of history on the north side of Chicago, and those boys capped it off with a World Series run. All right, on the way out the door here, Adam, the funniest teammate you've ever been around.
Oh, man.
Tom Kohler seems like the quiet, funny guy in that clubhouse.
Yeah, he's up there. I would say Don Kelly.
Really?
Don Kelly, who we got with, not like the get on the microphone on the bus funny, but just in conversations and just knowing his family and just getting to know him and getting close to him and everything has been awesome.
How about Frank Kaur? How was Frank Kaur?
He's good. We had a team dinner toward the end of the year, which was ended up being awesome having him on the team because he really, under such circumstances, really was encouraging to the guys and really kind of helped the guys relax a little bit. Just a really funny guy, a veteran guy who everybody respects. I mean, you kind of got, when you talk about the older veteran guys, Martin Prado is another one, you know, another guy that on top of you respecting him so much as a baseball player, he's somebody who you watch, you know, he's a pro's pro. He's coming in and these guys are doing all their work and they're outworking guys and they're smarter than all the other guys and they're veterans and they've got more experience than all the other guys. And on top of that, you watch them relax too and know how to have a good time and keep it loose and everything. So I think those are the guys that I most appreciate, you know, that can be funny at the same time, be the best workers on the team and have the most experience on the team.
Adam, man, we can't thank you enough for the time. Happy holidays to you and the family. Hope the family's doing great. Sounds like they are. Enjoy the rest of your offseason. We can't wait to see you in Jupiter in just a couple of months. Be well. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. It'll be here before we know it. Thank you.
Coming up next, the latest on the Marlins bullpen. And Marlins beat writer Tim Healy joins us shortly right here on your home for Marlins baseball. Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. I'm Kyle Seeloff with you up until 7:45 tonight, and let's get right back into it. The Marlins bullpen now shaping up quite nicely. Zunichi Tozawa has been signed. Sources say Brad Ziegler will soon be signed as well. Here is Marlins beat reporter Joe Fracero on the back end of Miami's bullpen.
The Marlins certainly have a packed back end of the bullpen now, getting Tozawa and then following it up with Ziegler. You know, that kind of was the plan all along, but they fell short on Chapman and or Jansen, which they did. You know, they got two guys who happened to be with the Red Sox last year. They add depth. They know they don't have an ace. They know that the rotation is going to be asked to do its part. You know, if you're not going to be able to make the front end in your rotation, your strength, you just kind of strengthen the strength, which was your bullpen.
Let's start with Tozawa, 2 years, $12 million, 30 years old, career 3.58 ERA, 7 seasons with the Red Sox. But he is coming off one of his worst seasons, finishing 2016 with a 4.17 ERA and 53 appearances, and was relegated and was seldom used after the All-Star break. The Marlins are hoping he can look more like his 2013 self, a season in which Tozawa appeared 71 times and had a sub-3.2 earned run average. Now, how about Brad Ziegler? Joe Fracero says Ziegler's varied looks may bode well in Miami's bullpen.
I think also what the Marlins try to do here in constructing their bullpen, they try to get some varied looks. The Braves were very effective in the Bobby Cox years doing that, guys who offered a little something different with Ziegler, the sidearm, with the sink. If you're an opposing team, you're going to get a completely different look. And I also think you're kind of looking at, you know, kind of the new age, you know, a little bit of what we saw in the playoffs. Everyone said you can't do that over 162. Maybe someone's breaking the code, and maybe the Marlins are the first team to kind of give that a shot.
Ziegler, now 37 years old, posted a 2.25 ERA in 69 relief appearances between the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Boston Red Sox last season. And again, although it has not been confirmed by the club, it certainly does appear as if he will be a Marlin in 2017. Coming up next, Tim Healy of the Sun Sentinel right here on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
All right, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Tonight brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Our second guest of the evening as we wrap things up on this Monday before the holiday season really kicks off, our friend of the program, Tim Healy, the Marlins beat writer for the Sun Sentinel. Tim, happy holidays to you and the family and everybody. How you doing? How's the offseason treating you?
So far, so good. Kind of slow on the Marlins front, but that's not necessarily a bad thing if it means you get to rest up a little bit.
You were at the winter meetings, Tim. Your biggest takeaway doesn't even have to be Marlins specific, but maybe even MLB big picture stuff.
Biggest takeaway, probably the Nationals and how they're kind of having a hard time luring high-end free agents the last couple of winters. Thinking back to the last winter, Yoenis Cespedes turned down more money from the Nats to go back to Mets, and then this year, they were after those high-end closers. The Marlins were after Jansen and Chapman, Mark Melanson, and I can't remember exactly how many they were in on, but they didn't end up with any of them. So you hear about them in trade talks for Chris Sale, for Andrew McCutchen, and they don't get either of those guys, but do end up with Adam Eaton, who is a very good player. But that was kind of striking to me, how the Nationals are trying to go all in on the next 2 years here while they still have Bryce Harper, but they haven't really been able to reel in the real big fish.
Well, and you tell me, and I know you, I'm sure you've talked to plenty of folks there at the winter meetings. I mean, it's kind of bizarre, Tim. I mean, there was at one point, like you mentioned, they thought they had the pieces to get both Chris Sale and Andrew McCutchen. And neither one of them ends up panning out. Of course, Sale goes to the Boston. McCutchen looks like he's going to stay in Pittsburgh, and he's definitely not going to Washington now after they just unloaded Lucas Giolito and brought in Adam Eaton from Chicago amongst a variety of other prospects. Why don't these guys want to play in Washington?
That beats me. I mean, in terms of the trade guys, Sale and McCutchen, it could be as simple as the teams not being able to match up on the right package of prospects. And in terms of the free agents, it sounds, guys like familiarity. They like, nobody really likes change.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cespedes didn't want to try another new town. He had been, played on three or four teams over the course of the previous two seasons, something like that. For Jansen, he obviously went back to where he knows everything in L.A. with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it's no particular one reason, but just kind of a combination of, for the Nationals, unfortunate factors.
Isn't it incredible the amount of money being thrown around for relievers in today's game?
It is nuts. Melanson was the first of the three closers to sign at the winter meeting. And he, of course, set a record, breaking Jonathan Papelbon's big deal with the Phillies a few years back for the largest contract awarded to a reliever. And there was speculation then, or kind of, a joke running at the winter meetings, that depending on how, in what order, Jansen and Chapman signed, the record could be reset three times in a row. That ended up not happening because Chapman went before Jansen, and Chapman had the bigger contract. But still, it's just mind-blowing. Some of these, $15, $16, $17 million a year for a guy who throws one inning every two or three games. I don't think they'll say it publicly, but the Marlins kind of dodged a bullet on that with not landing one of those guys.
Tim, so obviously a very unfortunate end of the season for the Marlins in the passing of Jose Fernandez. What are your realistic expectations heading into the season? We've seen the moves they've made, Edinson Volquez and Jeff Locke, Adam Conley, Tom Kohler, Wei-Yin Chen. You've got five starters. I'm sure they're looking for more. You can never have enough pitching. You cannot replace Jose Fernandez. He was one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, maybe even the best according to some folks. What are your expectations?
in terms of the rotation, you know, I was looking at the numbers for the five guys they have now. And I was looking specifically at adjusted ERA or ERA plus, which is it kind of controls for ballpark factors and kind of levels the playing field as far as that goes. And according to that stat, two of the Marlins' five pitchers, have been above average over the course of their careers. That's Conley and Chen, and they are barely above average. Mm-hmm. The other three are below average. So when we talk about the Marlins, they can never really replace Jose Fernandez. They're really not replacing Jose Fernandez. Now, what those five guys have done in their career so far aren't as important as what they're going to do in 2017. And, you know, there is upside there. If Conley takes a step forward, if Volquez and Locke and Chen all bounce back, then, yeah, that could be a pretty solid rotation. But that's a lot of ifs right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then in terms of the team overall, I think I'll hold off on a win-loss prediction until we get a little closer to the season here. But, you know, at the top, Nationals and Mets, they're really going to be duking it out for the NL East. And then the Braves, obviously, you know, the Marlins had a hard time with the Braves last year.
Yeah.
And baseball generally had a hard time with the Braves offense in the second half last year.
Yeah, people don't think – people look at that win-loss record and they're like, boy, they were really not good. The Braves were one of the better offensive teams in all of baseball in the second half, and they made some pretty intriguing moves this offseason.
I'm high on the Braves right now, and maybe that's just because I watch from afar and I haven't seen the low point of their 2016. But taking that second half offense and kind of supplementing it with the, you know, those veteran stalwarts in the rotation, Bartolo Colon, Ari Dickey, it's not hard to see them being the third place team behind the Nats and Mets next year. Now, whether the Marlins can kind of counter those moves with some more supplementation of their own, we'll have to see. But the NL East is not going to be easy in 2017.
I was chatting with Don Mattingly on Monday, Tim, and I said, Donnie, you've got Stanton, Yelich, Ozuna, Prado, Echeverria, Gordon, Boren, Real Muto, but when push came to shove at the end of the season, you guys were towards the bottom of the league in runs scored. However, Tim, we sit up there in the press box. They constantly have runners on base. Do you think this offense is poised to break out and have a big season? If they can't stay healthy.
Sure. Health is always key, of course. And if they do break out, then it wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, a lot of people have talked about how the Marlins were toward the top of the league in batting average, but toward the bottom of the league in runs scored.
Yeah.
And I have to think that with this position player core, which the team is, of course, very high on, given that the batting average was there, I have to think that the runs will follow. Obviously, the team has a new batting hitting coach, Mike Pagliarulo, an old Yankees teammate of Donnie back in the day, back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And he really has a scouting background, a video background. And I think let me put it this way. If Pags helps this lineup turn it around and turn the batting average into actual runs,
yeah,
that would not be surprising to me.
On the way out the door here, Tim, what do you think of the coaching moves? Pagliarulo, Freddy Gonzalez at third. He's one of the really popular guys in all of baseball. I think he could be great for this team.
I think so, too. You know, he's gotten fired from a couple jobs, of course, but, you know, you don't find too many people inside the game saying bad things about him. Obviously, it wasn't an easy situation with the Braves most recently, but he's a baseball lifer and a baseball man at heart, so it's never bad to have one of those guys around.
Tim, always a pleasure. Happy holidays. Thanks so much for the time. We'll chat with you again soon.
Likewise. Same to you.
That'll do it for us here at 940 tonight. As always, a big thank you to our terrific producer, Mike Lekomiak. I'm Kyle Seeloff saying good night from 940. We're off next Monday. We'll be back in 2 weeks right here on your home for Marlins baseball and the Marlins Hot Stove Show.